Hey, howdy. Welcome to It's Just a Countdown, part game show, part public service, where we rank anything and everything to tell you what is number one and what is number 10.
The topics range from esoteric to mundane, from fictional to non-fictional, and from the worst to the best.
I am your host, Zane.
And I'm JJ.
And today we are talking about our top TV shows.
The format works like this. Each person will give their entry, starting from 10, and give a small defense of their awful choice, and then everyone else will do the same, moving up from 9 all the way to their supremely bad take at number 1.
Once all lists are complete, we will decide on a unanimous best thing for the topic, and it will be honored in the Hall of Best Things Ever. If you want to submit an idea for us to rank, please do so at itsjustacountdown@gmail.com, and we just might rank some items in your topic.
That's right. But this week, super happy. I think I'm a little bit more passionate about television than you are most of the time, huh?
Yeah, probably. You're definitely a little bit more of a connoisseur of the home screen than I am.
But I would say the shows that you dedicate yourselves to, you love and are always worth watching. You've told me to watch a ton of shows that have been well worth my time and things that I haven't even gotten around to yet. So while I may watch more TV, I think the amount of bad TV that I watch might be a little bit of a higher ratio.
I think all the bad TV might also raise your taste for good stuff.
Well, I hope so.
So maybe that's also why you enjoy other things.
I like to believe so. I will say, this list kind of surprised me in a lot of ways. And it, I don't, you know, out of all the countdowns that we do, Zane, tastes change over time. And I agree. I'm inclined to believe that today, right now, in this moment, these are my top 10 TV series.
I think I also feel that way currently.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited about it. I'm in a weird mood. I've been stuck in Connecticut for longer than I thought my wife and I would be. I'm in a weird headspace, but hearing your voice come through the computer, I'm excited. I'm ready to do this.
Well, then let's Connecticut our way into number 10, buddy.
That was fucking good, dude. Awesome. Well, let's start out with the question we ask every damn time. Who started last time on Zelda?
I'm almost positive you started.
Which means you would have ended. Yeah, that sounds right to me. If ever we get off, we have to just rely on our listenership to be like, hey, it's like this.
True. We're filming gorilla out here.
Gorilla style, yes. And I would also quickly like to apologize. My audio is going to take a drop today because I did not bring my microphone to Connecticut. And we're riding old school off the computer today. But we figured it was better for us to keep providing content than it would be for us to wait a whole nother week till I get home. So here we are, baby, riding raw.
2009 vlog style. Pow, pow. Speaking of, my number 10 is another gorilla filmed show. It is the cartoon Home Movies.
Wow. That's a really good pick.
Home Movies is a great show that has a very iconic design style.
Oh, yeah.
It was one of H. John Benjamin's first jumping off points for his career. Just a beautifully funny, understated, beautiful piece of cartoon television. It's a very adult cartoon.
Yes.
That hung out on Adult Swim, I believe.
Yep.
God, it's just so funny. Every episode of that show is just so iconic.
I think one of the great things about, oh man, I used to watch it all the time. It's been years. Home Movies, right?
Yeah.
One of the best things about that show was it's like just blatant honesty in its comedy. It came from a real true place, I think. That awkward, weird childhood. The kid never really understands exactly what's going on, but he has strong feelings, just like every kid. That show really jumped out and struck a chord with me, and I love that it's not on my list. I love that it's on yours.
I remember there are episodes that little frames stick in my head, even from when I was like 9 years old.
Oh, yeah.
Like when Brendan's little sister swallows a marble or something. or when they try to film a movie. So good.
I remember that movie episode really well. It encapsulates why I didn't like soccer as a kid really, really greatly. My brother and my sister, big soccer kids. I did not like soccer. And if you watch home movies, you can be like, he was that kid, wasn't he? Yeah, he was that kid. And yeah, I was. And that show is just so good. We owe a lot to home movies, I think, and Adult Swim at large.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, that's an excellent pick. You want to roll into my controversial pick at number 10?
Very excited to hear your controversy.
I think you're going to have some things to say, but I stand by this. My number 10 pick in this week's countdown is Game of Thrones. Fucking Game of Thrones. Fucking wow. Game of Thrones. I think it's an excellent series. And while I do firmly believe that the last season should have been 2, I think the adaptation of A Song of Ice and Fire by George R.R. Martin, which, sidebar, some of my favorite books I've ever read. If you are a fantasy reader and you have not given those books a shot, I urge you to go and read them. Probably the fastest I've ever torn through a series of books, but we're not here to talk about books, here to talk about the series, which I think stands at this pinnacle of television. It kind of broke how expensive TV shows could be, and it reinforced how successful a miniseries can be, I think. Fantastic. I mean, it's like a miniseries in terms of there's 7 seasons. But
sure.
That style of storytelling. What do you think about my pick at number 10?
HBO really did just allow them to those brother people to just throw money at that show. And you know what? For like 5 seasons there, it like super paid off.
So, and I will agree, first 5 seasons, damn near perfection, in my opinion. The first season is like verbatim the first book. The second season, they make a couple changes. The third season, they take a hard left turn out of there and they start writing their own thing. But I can respect that in a book adaptation, because if you're verbatim the whole time through, you lose a little bit of excitement, I think, for the viewer.
Yeah, I think once, by the time they were getting to that fourth season, they were like starting to run out of runway in terms of printed material, right?
Oh, yeah. So the third season is the first time they made a divergence, I think, because they split, well, not the first time, but the first big choice they made in that regard, because the third book got split into season 3 and 4. So they started expanding it out. And this is my biggest problem, is they started expanding. And then David Benioff and D.B. Weiss decided, hey, you know the most crucial season of a show? You know the most important finale season? Well, let's just rush the fuck through that and not do it justice. And that was their greatest arrow in the heel, so to speak. They really let a lot of people down. But I will stand to say, I wish it was 2 seasons. I like all the choices made. I don't think they did anything wrong with the material. It's just they did not give us as an audience enough time to sit with it. And that was vital for a fantasy long-form drama like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So while they did us a little bit dirty, those sons of bitches who wanted to move on to more work after working on something for a decade, which I can kind of get, but you cannot sacrifice quality for your audience over personal desire to pursue new interests.
And even still, its memory resides soundly in your heart to make it onto this list.
I had a lot to say about it, but let's cap it off there. My number 10, it made the list, but just barely because of those reasons. I love it to death. What's your number 9, my friend?
Well, my number 9, very funnily, also had some issues with running out of source material as an adaptation.
Hmm.
And I had to think long and hard about which of these shows would make it onto my list. I spent a lot of time as a youth and as a teenager enjoying Japanimation.
Ooh, yeah.
And when I grew up, I became very anti-Japanimation. And I have a much more lenient relationship to it now.
Mm.
That being said, my number 9 is the anime Inuyasha.
Oh, buddy, you're going to enlighten the fuck out of me tonight. Tell me all about it. I don't know this one.
I am almost positive you've probably seen an episode of this on Adult Swim and just don't realize it.
Most likely.
It was like one of the most popular shows on Adult Swim for a while. It is the story of a 14-year-old girl who falls into a well and ends up in feudal Japan.
What?
In this, she meets a dog demon and a red coat who is arrowed to a tree named Inuyasha, whom she eventually frees in a moment of distress. And they begin an adventure together, trying to collect the pieces of the Shikone jewel, which Kagome shattered with her priestess arrow. This show is a beautiful Scooby-Doo Monster of the Week kind of thing that was originally a manga. And in this, you meet a lot of very fun characters with some of just like the most timeless character interactions like that I've ever experienced in a Japanese cartoon such as that one. A really cool plot that was never so self-serious that you rolled your eyes at it, but also you really were able to come along for the characters a lot. Huh. One of the most fun pieces of it was that they constantly wanted to push the characters Inuyasha and Kagome together into a relationship. So you also spend a lot of the show hoping for that, or the show would like you to. Just experiencing the complicated relationship between Inuyasha and his dead girlfriend, who gets revived, and she's walking around. There's an incel villain who almost shatters the entire world because he wanted to date Inuyasha's girlfriend but couldn't.
Boo.
Yeah, right. And then Kagome's out there being a 14-year-old girl from 90s Japan being like, why is everything so weird? But I love this show. I actually just finished rewatching it with a friend of mine. And it really, like, honestly, I liked it so much that I got all the Blu-rays for it. So now it is one of two Japanimations that I own the entirety of, and we will hear about the other one later.
That's really a cool pick. I looked it up. The costume that the girl wears is vaguely familiar, but there's only maybe a handful of animes that I've watched all the way through.
Sure.
And I will say most of them tend to take themselves too seriously, so I'm super interested in this. I'm going to have to watch it for sure.
Honestly, like, once your first child is a little older, I think anyone could really have a good time with the show. They just have to be old enough to understand dumb, raunchy humor. But I think it's a good time for everyone.
Well, hell yeah. Thank you. I'm very excited to give that a shot. I'm sure it'll go down as one of the few animes that I can refer people to.
Yeah, I can't just recommend Death Note to everybody.
I did like Death Note, but it's a real niche. And it's semi-problematic. And the Netflix adaptation was fucking trash.
Uh-huh.
I think we could talk a lot about that show, but let's move on.
Go ahead and show us your number 9.
My number 9 pick is the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Ooh, okay. That's fun.
Yeah, one of the earliest, like, really long-running sitcoms. It premiered in 1961. of course, stars one of my absolute heroes in life, Dick Van Dyke, and my TV mom, Mary Tyler Moore. And it has kind of this duality where the two main settings of the show, you're either at, Dick Van Dyke plays a man, Rob Petrie, yes, and he writes a comedy variety show in Manhattan, and then the other half is his home life with his wife and his son. And it is genuinely one of the funniest shows I've ever watched. And for it to have come out that long ago, it just is a classic. It still stands the test of time. It has a Halloween episode about walnuts and missing thumbs that is, to this day, when I rewatch it, some of the hardest I will laugh at TV. It is brilliant.
Yeah, that's one of those shows that's I find it belongs to a crowd of different television programs that are just so, like, comforting for me.
Absolutely. Comforting, inherently soul-warming. I mean, the characters played by Dick Van Dyke and Mary Tyler Moore, the whole reason that when you think of, like, the 60s, you think of two twin beds across the room and the man and wife aren't sleeping together, is that show.
Yeah.
And that's not to say that that's what they wanted to do. I think that had more to do with, like, Hays codes than anything else. But it, like, set the tone for every other sitcom for years and years. So that's why you see that over and over and over. I think, like, the Brady Bunch was one of the first shows to have a man and wife just laying in the same bed together. And that was like, oh my gosh, oh, the Bradys, those sluts. But the Petrie family will go down in my heart and my memory as just warmth, comfort, and joy. I love that show so much. If you've never watched it, do yourself a favor and binge it, because it is phenomenal. But really, that's all.
Maybe not like all at once. It's a forever TV show.
You're right.
But like,
do it at your pace. I think that's the brilliance of it. Do it at your pace. You're not really, if you jump around in episodes, that's fine. But if you can stream it, get out there, folks. Give it a go. It's the tops.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. It's the tops, but it's my number 9 pick. Well, let's take it a step further. What's your number 8, buddy?
My number 8 is a show that I fear may be controversial because it's a little low to what some people might put it. But my number 8 is The Wire.
Oh, dude. So many people have told me to watch The Wire, and I never have.
It's very good. The concept, I think, is self-explanatory, but it's about, in various positions, people that are investigating crimes and trying to bring people to prison. There's a... I think most famously people remember the first season with Omar and Omar coming and all that. Yeah. But it's a very good show. I don't look as fondly on it now. But it's a show that, like, inspired a lot of suspense. It was very well written. It was a very serious show that at the time had a lot to say, and provides a lot of really good character work from a lot of very powerful actors. The guy who played Omar very famously, like, couldn't escape that from a professional sense or a personal sense. People would yell Omar coming to him on the street. And that man was like a dangerous dude as a character. Oh. So this poor actor was just like painted as like a dangerous guy for kind of forever. The Wire was a very powerful entity when it was on TV, and it remains a pretty good show now. And that's why it's my number 8.
I think it's a great pick. I've never watched it, but I've been told by so many people that I need to. And furthermore, I think what stands out in my memory is that it's one of those shows that other show writers talk about in the show. Like, I can't tell you how many times in TV people are like, yeah, but The Wire. And the characters of a TV show start talking about The Wire. Sorry. It's a reminder every time that I gotta go check it out. And even if it doesn't have the same social relevance as it used to, I hear that it's just a solid show.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great piece of dramatic television.
I love it. Gotta respect it. I've never seen it, so I can't talk more about it. So how about I take us to my number 8?
Why don't you?
Oh, buddy, it'll be so great. All right, so my number 8 pick. I don't know how many people have actually seen this show, but this is one of my go-to things to watch when I'm sick, is the show Gallivant.
Ooh, I don't know if I've ever seen that.
Oh, you would love it, my friend. Gallivant is a musical fantasy comedy. The music and lyrics are written by Alan Menken and Glenn Slater. Ooh. It's
wow,
so phenomenal. Gallivant plays this dashing knight who's down on his luck. And, oh man, I don't even know quite how to describe it. But the evil King Richard kind of takes Gallivant's love, and the squire, who's played by the kid in the Harry Potter movies that announces all of the Quidditch games, they go on this mission to kind of win her love back. The king is played by Timothy Omenson, and I've seen him talk live,
yes.
And it's one of his favorite things that he's ever worked on. I think it's creative. I think it's unique. And one of my favorite things as a musical theater nerd is when you sit down to watch the series, each season, and unfortunately there are only 2 seasons, which is a travesty. It is my Firefly of musical things. Oh, shit, Firefly is not on my list. Nah, that's fine. I would have thought of it if I loved it that much. But
I suppose that's fair.
Yeah, but it is what it is. Unfortunately, the series was canceled after 2 seasons, but these 2 seasons are, when you binge them, they're only like 2.5 hours, which is like a musical. It's like just watching a standalone musical, and you have these 2 brilliant seasons that, I mean, I cannot recommend it enough to any musical theater nerd out there. It is hilarious, creative, unique in its storytelling, and again, fucking hilarious. It is so funny. I adore it.
Well, I'll have to give that a go sometime.
You must. I really think you would love it, Zane. I think you would really enjoy it. So I don't know what you can stream it on right now, but I know it's available somewhere for streaming. I urge you to find it.
You know, speaking of things that didn't make the list, I just thought of this. A list isn't even on my, or Lost is not even on my list of like shows I've watched. I just binged the entirety of Lost.
You went deep.
And even that, this was like 4 or 5 months ago, but like even that couldn't inspire it to make it onto my list of shows I've watched. God, Lost, what an unfortunate show, man.
I've never watched Lost, but I listened to your journey as you experienced yeah. that show.
Man, that was like the best season and a half of television I watched, only to have to experience 4.5 more. Oh, man, rough.
It really seems like the best of times and the worst of times.
It really was.
But moving forward, we love TV, I guess. We're taking our time talking about this, and that's fine. But let's tee it forward a little bit. What's your number 7?
My number 7 is It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, baby.
Ooh, all right. I remember when this show dropped. Hell yeah.
I don't know if there's really much to say about It's Always Sunny. You kind of get it or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
It's very dark. It deals with people who are incredibly annoying, but also very funny.
Yeah.
The whole point of the show is that all of your main characters are reprehensible, awful people.
Totally.
And they get into very stupid situations that always harm themselves.
Yeah. The implication is that they're horrible. They're horrible people. All, I mean, Charlie Day's character kind of toes the line of being terrible and just doesn't understand what better is. But that show, one of the things I love the most about it is how it came to be, which was, if you remember, years ago, I mean, honestly, what are they on? Season 15? Years ago, FX had a competition, and they said, send us your pilots. Whoever wins, we pick up. And It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is the show that won that competition. And it is so good. Danny DeVito Danny DeVito is amazing in everything he does, from like Taxi to Batman, whatever. But his character is Frank Reynolds. Is
yeah,
golden.
So anyway, I started blasting.
There's so many memes centered around Frank Reynolds. That show nailed it. They changed the game. I love it. I applaud your number 7 pick.
And you know Rob McElhenney?
Uh-huh.
In Lost.
Is he?
Yeah, for like one season.
Oh boy, that's crazy. He's like hanging out with Ryan Reynolds these days. It's a wild ride I'm sure he's had through Hollywood, but I love that group of people. Fantastic cast, great writers.
And well then, show us all about your number 7, if you would.
I would love to. I think it's the perfect segue, in fact, because a lot of people will refer to It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia as like the next, like our generation's Seinfeld. And Seinfeld is what landed at my number 7. It's like 9 seasons of gold, Jerry, gold. It's touted as being the show about nothing. It was one of the first sitcoms to really just be about like a group of friends, not necessarily about something in particular. But Jerry Seinfeld plays Jerry Seinfeld, created by him and Larry David, and the characters are the worst. They're terrible.
I was gonna say, Seinfeld is if It's Always Sunny was about boring people, that's Seinfeld.
Again, this is why I think it's for that our generation. But the generation before us, I think, yeah, totally. Those boring people. But like, man, I think there is a situation for anything in life that you're like, oh, that's like that Seinfeld episode. If you've watched every episode, you hear people talking and you're like, oh, yeah, that's just like when George Costanza knocked a whale or saved a beached whale. The sea was angry that day, my friends. It's also highly quotable. It's very funny. It might not stand up today as much as it did, but I can watch that show on repeat all the time.
Totally, yeah.
So good.
I think it still stands the test of time, most of it.
Most of it.
There's quite a bit that's a little rough now, but like even now I can put on an episode of Seinfeld and just be like, let's watch Jerry get upset over nothing. Let's watch George Costanza get upset over nothing. It'll be great.
Well, yeah, let's watch Jerry get upset over the size of his girlfriend's hands. Let's watch George Costanza lie and manipulate and unintentionally murder his fiance. Let's watch Elaine Benes just go from job to job to job with the most eccentric bosses in the world. Let's watch Cosmo Kramer fucking just be Cosmo Kramer, one of the craziest people in Manhattan, which is to say a lot.
And then at the end, let's watch them all go to jail.
Okay, yeah. If we're going to talk about bad finales, I wasn't really going to bring it up. Probably the worst finale of all time, in my opinion.
Wow.
It is, for what the show was, its finale gives you fucking nothing. It leaves you wanting more. It is no quarter, drag out bullshit. But the rest of the show is fucking great. And you know what? That's all I have to say about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, then let's take it up to my number six here.
Mm-hmm.
My number six is, in my opinion, the superior Matt Groening cartoon, Futurama.
Ooh, I have a hard time as a big Simpsons fan, but Futurama, man, golden episodes. Tell me about it. Why did it make your number six?
I think Futurama is one of the most consistently funny adult cartoons of all time. It is full of strange, diverse characters that just have nonsense backgrounds and nonsense lifestyles, because it all takes place in the future. And Fry, the main character, has been frozen in the year 1999, right?
I think so. Yeah,
and,
definitely.
Unfreezes in order, like a few hundred years later, or I forget the timeline, but Futurama is about Fry experiencing this new future where everything is very strange and everything's new, and it has so much social commentary that Matt Groening and the shows he runs are very good at. So much of it really stands the test of time even now. A lot of old Simpsons does as well. I love the episodes everyone loves, like Future, the one where Fry's from the past and the future. I love the one where he goes and finds his old dog.
God, that one rips your heart out, though.
Yeah. I love the one where he gets lost in, like, the passage of time and finds that cave where Leela, like, wrote a message to him. I love Bender's whole experience of being alive. And that poor show had so much network trouble that it had to end once in a movie. That show was a real trooper, and I will love it always for that reason.
I think that's a phenomenal pick to be on your countdown. It makes me do say I'm kind of bummed that neither that or, very strictly speaking, the first 10 seasons of The Simpsons are not on my list, but that's beside the point. I think Futurama has a million fantastic moments. The characters were honestly unlike anything I'd seen on TV at that point when it came out.
Yeah, very gruff, very vulgar, and it was just so unhinged compared to like other stuff around at the time.
It's the reason that every once in a while I tell my wife, shut up, baby, I know it, and she does not appreciate it the way that I think she should. But
great. My friend and I quoted Bender forever.
Oh,
that was
And that voice actor, can't remember his name at the moment, fantastic. He's in a ton of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Joe DiMaggio?
John DiMaggio.
John DiMaggio. There you go.
Joe DiMaggio is the athlete, I think. DiMaggio is the actor.
Number seven. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think New York Yankees, but okay. Let's... So, TV series, right? Well, are you ready for my number six?
Absolutely.
Last one before we go into the back half here. Mm-hmm. My number six show, and it... Oh, God, it's hard for me to put this at number six and not higher up on the list. Band of Brothers.
Ooh!
HBO miniseries. We're following Easy Company, 2nd Battalion, 506th Parachute Infantry Regiment of the 101st Airborne Division through World War II. You go from them in boot camp all the way from the fall of Hitler. And man... Whoo! That show takes you to some fucking places, and it's my favorite, hands down. I'm a huge sucker for the World War II soldier. That's my favorite storytelling of the World War II soldiers is Easy Company. I think it's such a great ride. It takes you through all the pinnacle moments of World War II. It makes you feel for each and every member of that battalion, even those that are boot it out or transfer it out of it, whatever. Brilliant. Brilliant. If you like World War II, you like Steven Spielberg, Tom Hanks helped create it as well. Phenomenal, phenomenal telling of Easy Company making their way through Europe. So good.
I think one of the other good, really, really strong things about Band of Brothers, it is so character focused.
Absolutely.
It is like Band of Brothers is named that because it is about those guys,
mm-hmm.
With the war as like their conflict that they have to overcome. It's a very intimate show. My dad similarly, loves that show for that reason. It took all the stuff that rocked about Saving Private Ryan and turned it into a highly condensed, version of it, that just was able to execute on all of those ideas, very, very well. Excellent show.
Could not agree more. The characters
are
what make it so fantastic. I will say before
we move
on. How
do you feel about, the sequel show, Pacific?
I love the Pacific. The reason why Band of Brothers stands slightly above the Pacific, and I'm glad that you asked that question, the Pacific is so brutal, and it beats the shit out of you to watch it. It's so difficult, and I have rewatched it many times, and it kicks the crap out of me every time, but it focuses more on about three characters, as where Band of Brothers focuses on the whole company. And there's something to me about the camaraderie and the group trauma of Band of Brothers that just tops it off for me.
Yeah.
I know many people prefer the Pacific. I think it's a little bit more of a raw, brutal look. And just the warfare in the Pacific Ocean, it was so much more... What's the word?
Visceral.
Visceral, dehumanizing. It's mm-hmm. wild. But Band of Brothers, you look at the whole company, and I cannot tell you how many times... my wife and I have been watching TV or a movie or whatever, and I'm like, oh shit, that's Joe Toy. Oh, that's Bull. Look, it's Nixon. Hey, it's Dick Winters. It's all these men that help tell the story of Malarkey and Wild Bill and everybody. There's something about it that just resonates with me. And as, like I said, yeah, there's something about the group of Easy Company making their way through that for just enough personality shifting for me puts it just above the Pacific. But I do, anyone listening to this, and I know there's thousands upon you, you must have seen this show, but those who haven't, please, please go out, watch Band of Brothers. This episode's turning into a PSA for me. Every single show, I'm like, go watch it, finish it. It's great. I think, I got very passionate. I knew I was going to at Band of Brothers, so why don't we shift gears a little bit? What's your number five?
My top five here are going to be packed with only incredible stuff here. Just a warning. My number five is going to be Flight of the Conchords.
Ooh, shit. I am jealous of the list and countdown you created, but man, that's some good shit. Tell me all about it, bud.
Flight of the Conchords is maybe the best two seasons of television you can ever binge through, man.
Agreed.
Flight of the Conchords is so funny. If you're not familiar with the show, you might be familiar with the band. Mm-hmm. But if you're not, they're a comedy folk band that makes some of the funniest music ever written. The two people that are at the front, Brett and Jermaine, are very funny. Both have gone on to win several awards for themselves.
Oh, yeah.
And the show itself is about them coming to America from New Zealand and living in a awful New York apartment, trying to make it as musicians. And boy, it is so funny. A lot of famous people do cameos on it.
Mm-hmm.
And they always implement some of their music into the show. And it's just some of the best comedy that you can enjoy in like a super consistent fashion.
Yeah.
I love that. I actually binged it a couple years ago when I had to move into an apartment and I didn't have internet for 2 weeks. And I just watched all of it over the course of like a day and a half.
It's, you can do it too. You can do it like that. But man, Brett and Jermaine blew my doors down with what you could do with comedy and music. And that's coming from someone who grew up listening to Running with Scissors by Weird Al Yankovic on repeat for probably years, you know. It's so funny. It's so creative. And when I think of New Zealand, when I think of people from New Zealand, Brett, Jermaine, and Murray are the first people that come to my mind. I'm thinking of
You almost just want to impersonate Roll Call, right?
Oh, yes. Brit? Brit? Do I have to say I'm here? Oh, come on. We know how Roll Call works. So good. Again, super jelly. Didn't make my list, and now I'm sad about myself. But that's okay. I'm always sad about myself.
Like you said before, if you felt that strongly about it, you would have thought of it.
That's right. That's right. I adore it. But my number five, I might put in contention above it. And that's why my number five pick for our TV series countdown is Schitt's Creek, created by Eugene and Dan Levy. I personally think it is six seasons of perfection. I think it meanders not. I don't think that it cuts any corners and it ends just when it needs to. This show, for me, is so hard to describe. You know, it is the following of,
I think it's if Seinfeld was about rich people.
I never looked at it in that light. In a way, but the beauty of it is it's this really hyper wealthy Toronto based family who's basically like, imagine they invented Blockbuster. But they get screwed out of their money. The person that manages their finances steals their fortune, and they are forced to live in a town that the dad, played by Eugene Levy, bought as a joke called Schitt's Creek. And now this family has to live in this rundown town, kind of full of hicks and nobodies, and swallow their humility. And that, I think the first season is a little bit rough for some people because they're like, these people just suck. All these down-to-earth everyday folks don't even get along with them. They're so full of themselves. But their character arcs, and I guess this is truly what I love about most things, the characters. Their journeys are just phenomenal. Dan Levy, one of the writers, creators of the show, real life Eugene Levy's son, plays Eugene Levy's son in the show as well. His character is played as pansexual. And when interviewed about it, they're like, why did you play that character pans? And he said, I'd never seen a pans character on TV. And I thought, there should be. So I did it. And that's, I think, some of the beauty of the show. It's a lot of things that you wish you'd seen that just never had been there before. And I really genuinely like to believe that it's changed the name of a sitcom because I think the show was written with such passion and heart that it exudes in every episode. It's hilarious, but I have cried multiple times watching Schitt's Creek, and I think it's just beautiful. And
I must say, I've only seen a couple episodes, so I don't have much more of an opinion to offer. But
I urge you to give it a shot. Go further than the first season if that's what held you back. But I think it's top tier stuff. That's why there are things above it that really broke my heart to put it above Schitt's Creek. But you know, it's the way the cards fall sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But speaking of the way that everything falls, What's better to you than your number five? What's your number four?
My number four comes with one caveat, which this caveat is why it is at number four and not number two.
Oh.
But my number four is Twin Peaks.
Oh, are you going to really make me admit to people on the internet that I've never seen Twin Peaks?
I suppose you just did.
You left me no recourse, my friend. I can't talk about it.
Twin Peaks has maybe the best first season ever executed of television.
This is what I hear.
And then a really rocky second one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's and the movie, the prequel movie that exists for it, Fire Walk With Me, also very good. You also can't watch it unless you've seen Twin Peaks.
Yes.
Twin Peaks, the show, is of course a play on daytime television. It is meant to evoke that. Some people forget to acknowledge this, I think, when they talk about Twin Peaks. It is a play on daytime television, soap operas, things of that nature, and attempts to tell a very strange story using that kind of space. And it is the ever continuing search for who killed Laura Palmer. And you follow Agent Dale Cooper as he attempts to utilize his resources at the FBI to locate the killer of Laura Palmer, and all of the twists and turns that you go on over the course of that whole show, but especially over the first season. Wow, just like truly wild stuff. Also, the intro for Twin Peaks is iconic. It's a very cool opening if you've never seen it. But if you are willing to admit here on the internet that you've not seen Twin Peaks, now's as good a time as ever, because it's some weird stuff.
Sorry, folks. I'm a huge sack of shit. I only say that because people have told me when I get going about TV shows, I just fucking love storytelling. I love it so much that I get very passionate about TV, and people hear me tell all these things. They're like, well, I mean, obviously you've seen Twin Peaks. It's right up your alley. It's probably, if you wrote a show, what it would kind of be like. And it blows my mind. The thing is, though, I will admit as well, you can cut this out later if you want to. Every single time I've started Twin Peaks, I've been too drunk to finish an episode. And I've been like, this is not what the show deserves. And I turn it off because I can't follow it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think watching that sober is probably pretty important, because if you were under any kind of influence, you might just let the show's nature watch over you, and you won't really get all of it.
You're absolutely correct. I've turned it off in episode one. Sometimes I've made it into episode two, because I'm like, it yields more than I can give right now.
Sure.
I gotta maybe, you know, I gotta travel on an airplane for like hours and hours soon. Maybe I should download some Twin Peaks, give it a shot.
Maybe. I think that honestly, now that you say that, that might make a good airplane ride.
Yeah.
It'll really help pass the time, I think.
All right. That's it. I'm doing it, baby. We're doing it this week. Let's go. Well, man, I'm super excited, but yeah, not much else to say about it on my end.
Well, then why don't you ride us into your numero cuatro?
My numero cuatro. There was one of the fiercest internal debates I've ever had writing this show with you. Like, putting my countdown, I was like, I'm struggling, I'm questioning. I faced my inner demons even. But my number four pick, as it lands with the numbers, is Parks and Recreation.
Hmm.
This show to me, who is created by the same person, Michael Schur. He's made The Office, obviously Parks and Recreation, The Good Place. There's more to name, but those are the ones that pop into my brain. It is the telling of local politics in a fictional town of Pawnee, Indiana. And man, the characters, the writing, all of it just lines up for me. I think it is one of the most heartfelt comedies you can watch. I know I Schitt's Creek, it barely eked it out, but it's just wonderful. And if you've ever watched the first season and had questions, just wait till Mark Brendanicwitz gets out of there, and then you're golden, baby. Those characters, the actors, the writers, they find something that doesn't happen every day on TV, and what they make is just unbelievable to me. I can't tell you how much I love it. I can't tell you how much many of the episodes mean to me. It makes me laugh, makes me cry, and I will say that I think they did it a season more than they should have, but that's the reason why it's my number four.
I'll never not laugh at Rob Lowe trying to dance to One Headlight.
Rob Lowe, Chris Traeger, literally one of the best characters on television. Unbelievable. And of course, Ron Swanson.
Sure.
Played, oh shit. Who it? Ron Swanson, you know, played by Nick Offerman, is one of the best one of the best characters to grace television screens in America, as far as I'm concerned. But I guess that's it. That's it for me. That, I don't have much more to say. Let's move in. Number three, take it away.
My number three is another war odyssey. It is MASH.
Oh, damn. You made a good countdown, dude. Tell me about it. I love MASH, but tell me about it.
MASH is the story of Hawkeye Pierce and his whoever his best friend is, depending on which half of the show you're watching.
True.
As they attempt to maneuver their way through the mobile medical unit set up in Korea during the Korean War.
That's right.
And hijinks ensue. That's the show, really. I mean, there's not much more to it. But they're the characters presented, the little arcs they get to go on, all of the relationships you get to see come together and fall apart and come back together is it's an astounding piece of television. MASH is the show that like lets me feel like the most comfortable when I'm watching it, which is hilarious because the movie it is based on is terrible. So it's funny that such a good show got to come from that movie. MASH has maybe, to me, the second best ending in television history. But we'll talk about what I think is the best ending in history a little later.
I'm very excited to hear that about what you believe is the best ending. I never really went into the best ending, but I'll tell you, MASH is just one of those shows, much like the Dick Van Dyke Show. It brings me this odd level of comfort that no one else can provide. Alan Alda's voice. Like,
yes.
My parents let me watch MASH at a very young age. You know, the movie, questionable. The show, brilliant, man. It's just so good. Radar was always my favorite character. And I love Alan Alda as an adult, but as a kid, it was all about Radar. Such a great show, too, because, again, I keep bringing up Heart, right? Like, MASH is a standout comedy. It is hilarious. But they do not shy away from the horrors of war and from real-life people going through dark trauma. I can't. Honestly, I can't speak highly enough about it. There's been so many times in my life that, you know, mostly I can think of one friend, Trevor. We will be hanging out and all of a sudden be like, you want to watch MASH? And like 8 episodes later, like, dude, I gotta go home. It's late. I gotta go to sleep.
Yeah.
But MASH does that to you. It's so good, man. Great pick. Phenomenal pick.
Absolutely. Well, why don't you tell us about your number three?
All right. I will tell you about my number three. I think that all of your shows make like the 0.5 in my countdown, but
sure.
you done good, buddy. My number three is a show that my wife and I got you into called The Good Place.
Oh, yeah.
Another Michael Schur comedy, but it is a show about a woman played by Kristen Bell who is, I think, lovely. I love her so much. But she dies, and she shows up, and Ted Danson welcomes her to the good place. This isn't the bad place, but the good place. And the places that the show takes you, the journeys of the characters, which are just so well written,
mm-hmm.
from Chidi to Jason to Hani, literally everyone in that show. The premise is brilliant. It flips you around multiple times throughout it. It doesn't go on too long. Only 4 seasons long, which blows my mind that all the episodes I can think of, all the scenarios and ridiculous moments are just 4 seasons. It's only 53 episodes, and that absolutely blows my mind. It's so...
Half-hour episodes, great. Too. Like, what?
It's easy to digest, and yet, to me, one of the absolute smartest comedies ever written. This is the last comedy I will mention on my list, by the way. So, to me, The Good Place may be one of the smartest, genius-level comedies ever written in my philosophical broken brain.
Yeah, the ending of that show in particular asks you to wrestle with some ideas that are maybe hard to swallow.
Yeah,
depending on your life view.
You're totally right. It takes you from simple ideas of time not being linear and being more like if someone wrote Jeremy Baramy in cursive, which is amazing. Jeremy Baramy. I think Jeremy Baramy all the time. But it also really does take you through some mental gymnastics, and it poses questions in a lighthearted way
mm-hmm.
that I still think about on a daily basis. When you think about the
what
afterlife,
I love about it,
gotta think about the good place.
Yeah, what I love about it is it presents it all with zero cynicism.
Yeah,
which would have been so easy. It would have been so easy to make that show edgy and dumb.
A third of the characters should be the most cynical beings to ever exist, and yet
mm-hmm.
are forced to look at humans in this peculiar, lighthearted fashion.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I adore it. I adore it. And I'm afraid
show.
That's part of my problem today is I'm just going to be like, I love it. I love it so much. And I don't have too much else to say. And I think that that's just fine. So,
I think there might be more to say, but that also might walk into stuff that maybe people should experience for themselves.
And I think that's what's tying my hands behind my back, which
yeah.
again is fine. And is another reason that I'm very excited to get to your number two. What could that be?
My number two, we're coming out here and we're gonna rock the dragon. It's Dragon Ball Z, baby.
Oh, fuck me. So many shows I haven't seen. All right, lay it on me.
Dragon Ball Z is probably the most formative show of my youth, of a lot of people's youth.
Yeah.
The adventures of Goku are a sight to behold. Specifically, Dragon Ball Z is the one I picked, because that's the one that I have the most strong resonance with. It's an anime that really helped define the shonen anime formula. Almost everything you've ever heard of today owes itself to Akira Toriyama and the work he did as the writer and illustrator for the Dragon Ball manga. Dragon Ball Z is just incredible. It's maybe not like the... it's certainly not the most well-told story ever made. But it is one of the most exciting, man. Dragon Ball Z is a powerhouse for a reason. And I will love it till I die. I think it was maybe the first show I ever owned in its completion. It's so, so good. I will watch Dragon Ball Z as a comfort thing more often than anything else. I don't rewatch television shows all the time, but when I do, it's usually MASH or it is Dragon Ball Z.
I gotta say, this one, out of everything you've mentioned so far that I have not watched, probably makes me the most jealous of an experience that I cannot obtain at this age.
Yes.
It is.
I don't know that Dragon Ball Z has a lot to offer you at this point.
Right. It's one of these things that if I could go back in time and give myself like three pieces of advice, I genuinely believe on that list, it's like, hey, don't smoke cigarettes. It's fucking stupid.
Sure.
Watch Dragon Ball Z. Get over yourself. It's so good. Or like, give it a shot. And who knows what number three is. But man, it's an experience that I'm super jealous about. I was walking through Target today, and my 3.5-year-old daughter points out this hoodie sweatshirt. Someone that grew up on Dragon Ball made a hoodie that you can buy at freaking Target. That's how impactful this show was to our generation, and I fucking totally missed out.
Look, man, if your daughter is showing an interest in Dragon Ball designs, let her have it.
It's true.
That's all I'm asking.
You know what? Maybe that's a sign. Maybe it's a sign. Let's go. I can experience it through her eyes. Because it is this thing that is a monument that so many of my best friends in life are like, oh, yeah. But fucking Dragon Ball Z, though. And
yo, when Goku fought that guy and when Trunks fought that guy, that's what the show is.
And when Vegeta did this, or Piccolo and Gohan and whatever, I know the names, but I remember must have been about 10 years old, and I was outside of church, and maybe I was like 8. Someone's like, hey, do you watch Dragon Ball? And I was like, nah, it's not really my thing. And they were like, oh, you don't want to see people jump up into the air by fucking 100 feet and then slam into the ground with their fist to this other guy that then just flies around and blasts this out of his hands? And I was like, nah, I'm cool. And what a fucking idiot I was. What a naive imbecile I was back then. How dare I judge it off of coolness.
That kid was onto something, man. I hope you can go back in time if you ever could. And just like right after that kid walks away, adult you walks up to kid you and is just like, hey, get it together, little JJ. Watch it.
Genuinely, this is the mental image. Me dragging my first cigarette, popping out of a vortex, punching myself in the nose, going, no. And then going back to that very moment and be like, shut the fuck up. You don't know what you're talking about. Listen to this kid. He's got it going on.
Goku can fire energy from his hands.
Can you, JJ? Yeah, I didn't fucking think so.
Well, after watching this show, you're goddamn gonna try.
You're right. I would try. But I missed out. There's nothing I can do about that. But besides, encourage my kids to have an experience that I never did.
Well, there you go.
There I go. That's a lesson hard learned. But I think it might be time for me to take us into my number two.
Absolutely.
All right. My number one and number two, I went back and forth for so long. I talked about it to my wife. So much happened. They might as well be tied, but as I have talked about before, things must fall where the numbers lie. So that is why my number two pick is the British sci-fi long-running the British sci-fi long-running Doctor Who.
Of course.
The Doctor being in the TARDIS, which is time and relative dimension and space box, being able to go through all the timey-wimey events, being able to reincarnate into these different versions of himself, all of it is just so romantic to me, and it's this great blend of British sci-fi and British comedy. And one of the defining features of British sci-fi, unlike American sci-fi, where we're always going outward and exploring, the Brits see things coming to us, which I think is a very unique way to view it. All
sure,
these
yeah.
aliens coming to Earth because something special is happening here. And of course, there are many Doctor Who episodes that take place in the middle of space, on different planets, on different timelines, whatever. But the majority of it happens in London. And I just, I love this show so much. This Time Lord who has lost all his people from the planet of Gallifrey, from the Time War, has a stolen TARDIS, a time machine traveling thing, if you've never seen it, that can go through time and space and really, honestly, takes the Doctor where the TARDIS thinks the Doctor needs to be. And it just speaks to me. There's something about it that is romantic, that is funny, that is fascinating, that is interesting, that is philosophical, that is ridiculous at times.
Yeah.
And I love it. I love everything about it.
And responsible for some very, very good episodes of television.
I couldn't agree more with that. One of my go-tos. One of my go-tos.
Some, like, singularly great episodes of television, which is a weird thing to say about a TV show, right?
Right.
Because you kind of want to take it as its whole. But Doctor Who creates some very interesting on its own television.
Absolutely. Over 13 people have played the Doctor in these different ways. That's a great premise to, like, keep a show running for a while, but it works so well for a standalone Monster of the Week show. And I love Monster of the Week stuff. I think it lends itself to a certain type of storytelling that you don't necessarily get everywhere. From, let's see, I believe Doctor Who debuted in 1963, ran for 26 years, had a very big hiatus, and then came back in 2006 or 5. And then ran for, I think we're on like our 16th year past that, to present day, where Jodie Whittaker, the first female Doctor to play the role. And man, I love it. I love the questions it brings to you. I love the humor that it can take into a horrible situation. And it's not afraid to go to very dark places. Some of my favorite moments of Doctor Who are the Doctor screaming at something honestly so much bigger than him in the grand scheme of time and space, basically screaming into the face of a god saying, I will protect these people. This is a story worth telling. There's, you know, this is much more than what you see. And I think that that view of humanity kind of helped get me out of a bad place when I started watching Doctor Who. It took me out of a very cynical point of view and put me in a very optimistic look at the bright side of life sort of point of view.
You know, but it just asks you to consider stuff you might take for granted as well.
100%. 100%. It goes from the fantastical to the everyday and literally everything in between. I love it.
I will say, I'm very curious if Doctor Who is your number two, what your heart wrestled into number one. I will be very curious.
It was a fucked up fight, but I think you need to divulge your number one first.
Well, anyone who knows me personally already knew what the number one was going to be, baby, but it is the one and only The Sopranos.
I knew it was coming. I knew I had to admit I'd never seen it. Tell me all about it, Zane.
The Sopranos is, of course, the story of Tony Soprano, a mobster who operates in North Jersey. As he operates with his day-to-day life, the original premise of the show is that Tony is court-ordered, I believe, to visit a psychiatrist for therapy. We discover over the course of these sessions and the conflict he deals with of being a mobster who goes to therapy in the late 90s, and all of that means for his personal relationships, his professional relationships, and what that means as a mobster operating in late 90s North Jersey, as he also has inner turmoil with his own family and with things going awry with his quote-unquote work. It is a absolute evaluation of a horrifying sociopath who has a great amount of humanity in him that is so, so compelling to explore and is made possible by the very excellent performance of the late James Gandolfini.
Fantastic.
Who has a lot of interesting opinions about Tony Soprano that I think sometimes when you hear actors talk about characters, you can tell it's like a little thing they wrote up.
Yeah.
But when James would talk about Tony Soprano, you could tell that he was using all of the stuff he was telling any kind of interviewer to inform choices he was making in the show. And in doing so, like watching the very rare interview he gave, would heighten your enjoyment of his performance. And the more unhinged, the more angry, the more full of rage Tony gets over the show, it's powerful stuff. The other thing is, in the first season, Tony has to deal with panic attacks. So that's the thing, right? Is like, he's this big, powerful mobster that is currently the acting underboss for their family. And here he is like freaking out at nothing, or what it appears to the world. And it investigates like aspects of viewing your own masculinity and the role masculinity plays in society. And in the ways in which it is toxic, the ways in which it is not helpful, the ways in which it can be helpful. Just very interesting characters. So compelling to watch. There's obviously all sorts of very valid criticism about the show. But I think in my heart of hearts, I will still always consider this show in particular one of the finest pieces of television ever made. It also helped popularize the hour-long drama for HBO. The hour drama didn't exist in this way before The Sopranos.
You're absolutely right. That's like my number one thing to say as someone who's only watched like the first couple episodes. And I mean, my wife has zero interest in it. I don't know why I married her. I'm kidding. I have a beautiful, wonderful, amazing, interesting wife, but she just doesn't have any interest in watching mafia stories. And those are some of my favorite stories for some reason. It tells of this duality of man, I think, where you can have a family that you love and you're very empathetic towards, and you have friends and they're part of your family even. And then you can turn that switch off, compartmentalize murder to other people, and move on. And I think that's fascinating. I've heard so many great things about The Sopranos, and you're right that it changed the name of the game. It changed television completely. I'm not sure when HBO began or whatever, but like that's what HBO became.
I think The Sopranos was also like the first time society had a show that like was a weekly thing that everyone wanted to talk about at the dinner table, at the water cooler. Like it was one of those shows that everybody just really wanted to keep up on because it was the thing everyone was going to talk about.
I will admit, I know a decent amount about what sort of happens as far as like characters dying, probably, because when I was a kid, I watched a lot of late night television and they'd be like, hey, can we talk about what happens with your character? from The Sopranos, and they'd be like, yeah, of course, that's why I'm here, you know?
Uh-huh.
And so they would talk about these things from The Sopranos. Enough time had passed, they could talk about it on network television, and it's just, you know, that's another one. It's going on the list. I got to watch The Sopranos. I have to.
Honestly, if we were ever going to do like a watch podcast, I would say we should do this one because it would be so fun.
Ooh, I am absolutely into that. I would
also
totally do that with you.
Continue. Yeah. And I was going to say, to follow up on my earlier remark, this show has the best ending in television. Don't at me.
Oh, don't at him, folks. Fuck off with your opinions. That's high praise. You know, some mm-hmm. of my best ending television shows didn't even make my list. The best ending might not make the show, but when it's part of something incredible, it helps encapsulate it in history. And I think that, I don't even know what the ending is like, but I bet it's just what you need at the end of it.
I would agree.
Not everybody
some might
gives
not.
That to you. Yeah. Yeah. Well, my friend, are you ready for the end?
Literally more than ever, I need to know what in this moment overtook Doctor Who.
I'm actually a little surprised that you don't have the idea in your head. However, I get it. I'm a mysterious, enigmatic man. However, as a child, one of the first shows that really took my breath away and took my imagination
away.
That brought me to this place literally outside of our own world is motherfucking Star Trek.
Yeah. Okay.
And I know that's a huge franchise. There's so many movies, so many series of it. If I have to choose, I will say my favorite Star Trek series is the original, but I think the best is probably Next Generation.
Can I tell you why I didn't think of this for you?
Why is that?
Because Star Trek has been such a big part of my life as well that I barely consider it television. It is just like a human experience I expect all people to have, and it has like transcended the TV label.
You nailed it on the head, though. That's why I had such a debate, is because I was like, this is just a part of my identity. Is it my favorite TV? And my wife's like, if it's part of your identity, I would say so.
Yeah.
You know, created by Gene Roddenberry in the 1960s, it's gone through so many different ways of telling. And to be honest, some of the more modern tellings aren't necessarily my favorite. I love that golden era of Star Trek, that next-gen Deep Space Nine Voyager kind of era. But for those of you who might not know, it's really just about humans. And even though it's a show that focuses a lot around aliens, it focuses around humanism. It focuses on how we would interact, how we can accept, how we bend with these different cultures. And it's thought-provoking, it's interesting, it's funny at times, sad at times. It is whatever the story needs to be. It's a show that typically you can kind of watch whatever episode. At least in like the golden era. And in the original series, it genuinely doesn't matter. In the original series, which I've been rewatching recently, there's episodes where they're like, hey, Bones is gonna die. And at the end of the episode, they're like, nah, we figured it out. It's cool.
Bones is not gonna die.
He's not gonna die. And I think that the show as a whole, and let's see, I gotta watch so many of the newer ones though. Original series, there's an animated series, Next Gen, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Enterprise, Discovery, Picard, Lower Decks I have to watch. There's a new one, Prodigy. Prodigy just came out. I hear that's very good too. It's taking the storytelling into these new directions, and that's what Star Trek is all about, is taking a way to tell these stories. And I know it's very sci-fi, but it's very everybody. I think it's super accessible. Those that are bored by it, I think, are not willing to open themselves up to allegories of culture.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
It is a part of me. As a kid, I just wished that I could go to Starfleet, that I could stand on this ship and explore planets and space as a whole. But it also is very... It has a lot to do with social commentary as well.
Yeah, there's no show on the planet that believes in humans more than Star Trek.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, like, Doctor Who might be a close second, but Star Trek stands high above it, in my opinion. Like, I think it just...
Star Trek has the balls to say, no, humanity solves poverty and material issues. Mm-hmm. They just got over it.
They just need time. And that's one of the beautiful things. Gene Roddenberry had to fight to have a black woman as one of the central characters who stood on the bridge in a position of power. He had to fight to have an Asian man, a Japanese man, in the 60s be in a position of power.
Mm-hmm.
I think the creator of this show saw something in people that even most people struggle to see. And it's given me, it makes me a better person. Every time I watch it, I'm reminded of how I can do better for the people I share this world with. And to me, that's the greatest good a television series could have. But I'm also just, I love it. It's fun. It's exciting. It's a little cheesy sometimes, but I love cheese. You know,
sure.
I'm almost at a loss for words, even though I've said all these things about it.
I too believe in our Star Trek future, even in these trying times.
Even in these trying times, when you could offer me an egg, I'll take Star Trek.
I actually, funny story, my dad just celebrated his 60th birthday. And we got him a cameo from Gates McFadden, who plays Dr. Crusher
on The Next Generation. Oh my god, really?
Yeah.
Dude, I bet he lit up.
He was very excited by it.
My dad and I can talk Star Trek all day. My brother and him, I mean, my brother likes Star Trek too, but they can talk sports. I never really got super into sport. The one sport I like is hockey, and it's the one sport my dad doesn't care about. But Star Trek is the thing that we have. I can talk to him about it all day. Going over to your dad's house? Dear God.
Yes.
He'll blow the door down. Oh, well, you remember this episode of Voyager when the, or this episode of DS9 when the Bajorans were threatened to extinction. My God, your father really does love it, and I admire it. Gates McFadden, too. Ah! Almost my TV mom, if it weren't for Mary Tyler Moore, because when I was watching Next Generation when I was a kid and it was airing on TV, well, Wesley Crusher was who I wanted to be. And
yeah, sure.
Gates McFadden. I love it. I love Star Trek. I love it so much. I could talk about it all day, and at the same time, there's not a whole lot I need to say.
Well, I think we had a very good, very passionate list here.
Yeah, we haven't had an episode this long in a hot minute, my friend. But that leads us to a very interesting debate to see what may fall into the Hall of Best Things Ever.
You know, it may be topical, it may be boring, but I think given the state of our world, allowing Star Trek to exist as our favorite TV show, the thing that represents TV, something so optimistic about human activity, I think that would serve very well in our famed hall.
Well, Zane, genuinely, I've got a little tear welling up in my eye. I think what we need most is the hope and optimism that Star Trek brings us.
And absolutely.
I couldn't agree more with you. I genuinely am kind of getting choked up.
This award is, however, presented by The Sopranos. This is done without contention.
Presented by The Sopranos is Star Trek.
Yes.
And I know that encapsulates many works, but without Gene Roddenberry creating the original Star Trek, none of it would be possible. Star Trek, in and of itself, falls into the Hall of Best Things Ever.
Congratulations. Well, folks, thanks for enjoying this edition of It's Just a Countdown. Remember, if you would like to submit an idea for us to rank, send them on over to itsjustacountdown@gmail.com. Again, that is itsjustacountdown@gmail.com.
Are you upset? You shouldn't be. Are you thrilled? You ought to be. But don't worry about it either way, because just remember,
it's just a countdown. Yeah, I think that works.
Yeah, me too. It was a long one, but thanks for sticking it through, friends.
Absolutely. See you in the next one.
Toodles.